Well, the Cats, they didn't get that grand final result they wanted, clearly, but there was so much to like about the Cats during the season, and I think it's fair to say the good vibes have continued post-season in the trade period and also off the field. And a big reason for that, of course, is their CEO and a man who's always been kind to the station, Brian Cook. Big hello. Welcome to SCM, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Sam, and hello, listeners. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. Hey, you've sold up and you got out of gaming as a club. You described it as a proud day for the club yesterday. Can you paint the picture for us around what made this such a significant move for Geelong Football Club?
Okay, Sam, it could take a long time, but I won't do that. I'll try and summarise it, mate. Around about 6 or 7 years ago, we made a decision to exit from gaming, but do it in a slow way in order for us to find the new revenues that were necessary as we pulled ourselves out of gaming. 6 years down the track, we now have been able to sell off our last facility in Wyndham yesterday, the Brook. Melbourne Racing Club were the buyers, and we did that. And that is the end of our gaming operation. We also have decided over the years not to enter into a sponsorship contract with any of the gaming groups, nor do we have any gaming advertising, and we don't have any investment in gaming through our foundation. So all in all, we believe we're 100% out of the gaming world.
So reading between the lines, what you're saying is that the decision to get out of gaming won't have an impact on your bottom line, or if it does, it'll be minimal?
Yeah, we've been able to dwindle away. It's probably the net difference has reduced remarkably over the years. And in 2019, we were relying on gaming for about $1 million. 7 years ago, we actually made $4 million net out of gaming. So we really are down to $1 million. And what we're doing is the dollars that we've raised from selling the Brook will be used to buy businesses that provide those revenues to make up the last $1 million. So we've been doing it a bit slowly but surely over time.
That's fantastic news, and I imagine a popular one with your members and supporters. Brian, the soft cap copped obviously a $3 million cut, and many tragically lost their jobs, but player wages will only have a 3.5% cut, and the salary cap only came back 9%. I mean, is it fair to say, from where you sit, that with the benefit of hindsight, the financial crisis that we forecast and we all initially feared, thankfully hasn't proven to be as bad?
Yeah, I think that's true, Sam. And the major reason for that is the generosity of our members, the generosity of our sponsors as an industry, as well as people who donate. If we could use our club for example, We maintain 90% of our members and 90% of their revenues during a time when they couldn't attend matches. That's just one example. Now, spread that over the entire industry, all the clubs and the AFL, and we're finding that the losses that we were expecting, we are nowhere near that as an industry, or from a personal point of view, our club will break even. If not do a little bit better from an operating point of view, whereas 8 or 9 months ago we were predicting $8 million losses. So that's the enormity of the change due to the generosity of people out there.
Fantastic. So I was going to ask you when you would expect to formalise your financial position. Obviously Essendon with an asterisk announcing a small profit, but as you say, you feared a $8 to $10 million hole. So you're thinking, you know, you could at worst potentially break even?
Yeah, I think from an operating point of view, break even, and for the financiers out there, what it means is that after non-cash items like our depreciation on the stands and everything else, we'll declare about a $2.5 million loss, I think, something like that, and that's the norm for us anyway in any particular year because of the stands, etc.
Yeah. Obviously, clubs like yours and right across the country made big cuts to your football departments, and not just football departments, but staff right across the board, as I said, unfortunately left without jobs. What does the next few years look like, do you think, for clubs in that regard, Brian?
Yeah, no, really good question. And the true answer is I don't know. But what we need to do is just be ready for all sorts of scenarios. For instance, we have six different budgets for next year, six different scenarios, depending on crowds and player payments, all sorts of things like that. So we just have to be adaptable, flexible, all of those things, and be prepared for both the best case and the worst case. And they have very different outcomes in terms of what you do with staff or with player contracts, et cetera, et cetera. It's just about being flexible, really is.
Speaking of crowds, I think your capacity can get up to around 40,000. You've got the Stage 5 redevelopment funding secured. A two-tier northern stand's going to be built, replacing the Ford stand and the Ablett terrace at the city end of the ground. So that's fantastic news.
Yeah, good. That's exactly right, Sam. It's down the city end. It's the last piece of the puzzle for us, so to speak. It's the last stage, and we would have gone right around the stadium. Five different stages and a 21-year or 22-year project. So it's been amazing, really. And over that five stages and 22 years, we've been able to raise or attract around about $300 million of money from governments, the AFL, and ourselves, and local councils, and our donors. And it will be a 40,000 capacity stadium, and you know, it will be, the best regional ground in Australia.
Yeah, that stadium's come such a long way. Tell me, though, do the Ablets retain the naming rights on the new facility?
I can't answer that. That's up to the state government and the ministers involved at the time of completion. With the new lease arrangement we have with the government and the Kardinia Park Stadium Trust, a lot of things are changing, such as, you know, who has the rights to name the stands. And at the moment, we're looking at a sort of a collaborated approach where we'll make a joint recommendation to government. I'm hoping we can, but I don't want to prescribe that at this point of time, mate.
Just on Gary Jr. Retiring this year after one of the all-time great careers, I don't want to speak on his behalf here, but I wonder what he would do. Is there a role at the club for Gary next year, or is he looking for a clean break from the game for a period of time?
Yeah, I think he's looking for a clean break for a period of time. I think he'll probably buy off more property investments as distinct from getting back into footy as a coach or some sort of assistant. That's my feeling about this matter. He needs to work through his family issues right now with his wife and his son Jordan and Levi. So I just think he probably just wants some time on his own for a little while to work through those things.
Brian, I know you're the chief executive, but you're a footy fan at heart. I was pretty keen to ask you where you were when the club finally landed Jeremy Cameron in the final minutes of the trade period.
It was amazing. It was probably the best word to describe it. It was quite messy, really messy, because we had like seven emails ready to go, and we only had to press one, so to speak. But there was some renegotiations in the last 90 seconds around the deal, and it just made things really really align. I was quite uptight about the whole thing, and I just can't imagine how Jeremy was feeling, that's for sure. But it was a really tight, tough, challenging last 2 minutes, to say the least.
Obviously did very well to get, Higgins in, Isaac Smith in. But with Jeremy Cameron, as good as he is, I mean, he came at a price. Is there some suggestion that you overpaid, or can you not overpay for a player who could be the difference come late next season?
You can present an argument on both those scenarios, Sam, and, I could present an argument for both. And the truth is, you won't know for another year or two. That's the answer. In my experiences around the draft, you should never, predict certainty around draft and their performance in a year or two's time. We just have to wait, mate. Look, I think that the deal is a good one for both at this point in time. They got three first-round picks. First time ever, so it's historical, it's a groundbreaker, I get all that. And, we can easily be accused of giving away too much. But don't forget, we get two second-round picks back.
Yep.
And that's equivalent to a late first round in the point system of the AFL. So in reality, if you're trying to net it all off, we provided two first round picks for Jeremy. So that's Steve, not so bad.
No. So Stephen Wells gets obviously Cameron Higgins and Smith in. So the latter two in the twilight of their careers. What do you say to the people who say you've gone chips in, that it's flag or bust, that you've gone all in to try and get this premiership in 2021?
Oh, no, I think that, again, people can say that, and there's some truth in the fact that we want to win a premiership next year. Have we thrown in all the cards for on the basis of a one-year possibility? No, that's not what we haven't done. We've got lots of young people coming through, and the issue for us is we have to provide opportunity for those kids, for those young players. And that's going to be a challenge, given how strong our side, I think, could be in terms of senior players. And so I think the real challenge is how do we provide opportunity for our young players next year?
Yeah.
Okay, and you know, and that'll need a different mentality at times. I think around some of the senior players who expect to play 22 games, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll play 15. You know what I'm saying? So I just think there'll be a little more. I think we'll expect a little bit more flexibility around the expectations of senior players and how we can bring the young kids through.
How did the Jack Stephen retirement come about, Brian?
Yeah, no, that was a joint decision. You know, in the hubs, you see firsthand how people live.
Yeah.
And what their challenges are. And in a really human and caring way, it was obvious to us that, you know, Jack was struggling, you know. To meet the full commitments of high performance AFL athletes and what was required and the recovery and so on and so forth, and we met with both him and his player manager, and we agreed that maybe Jack should look at other things in life, particularly around his physical and mental health. So They that's how it happened. And it happened at the end of the hub, excuse me, and after the grand final. And all parties admitted and accepted that there was probably a better alternative than another year of AFL football for Jack.
You've been busy contract extension-wise, haven't you, in recent days? So Tom Hawkins, Henderson, yep. Simpson, Henry, Stewart, Reece Stanley, I think Zach Tui as well. There's probably a couple of loose ends. I think we got a text moments ago here asking about Quinton Narkle, what might be happening with him, Brian?
Yeah, no, my understanding is that Quinton will accept an arrangement for another year or two, so that'll be done. You'll find that every club's a bit different in how they address contract publication. And, a lot of those contracts, those extensions you were talking about, were done months ago.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily, explain to our people that we've completed contracts as soon as we do it. Sometimes we wait because there's a better strategy involved than telling it straight away. And so around about half of those contracts were completed a month or two ago.
A lot's already been said about next year, Brian. I mean, speaking broadly here, do you hope it returns to what a normal season looks like, or would you support things that were a success like this year, like the footy frenzy, for example, or not so much shorter quarters, but whether we go back to the 20 minutes? I mean, would you like it to go back to the status quo?
I'm a bit traditional. I like the 20-minute quarters. And so for me, it's trying to get back to 2019 again. Having said that, there's a number of things we've all learned. Not so much from my point of view, anyway, from the on-field stuff. Okay, it's more the off-field from my point of view. You know, how we connect to our members, how we maintain the physical and mental health of our staff, the increased importance of digital communications, all of those things, and then maybe even the relegation of the importance of special events like, face-to-face best and fairest and so on and so forth. Mm. So I think we'll do things differently, but I think it's more off-field than on-field, and it'll be more about the way we work as distinct from what happens on the field, mate.
Can you believe we actually got through season 2020 in the end, Brian? I remember listening to you at the start of the year and you could hear not the despair but just almost the sadness in your voice. I mean, how do you look back on how we actually got through the thing?
I think it's been amazing, really. I was really concerned and anxious about the worst case scenario occurring, and it was all so new to us. But we did find ways of getting through it. There's been damage done. For instance, in our club, we had 26 redundancies when we went early, because we wanted people to know so they could get other jobs. And that represented about 20% of our staff. Of the other 80%, 40% took a wage decrease anywhere between 10 and 50%. And the other 40% we left alone because they were low-income earners. Mm. So that was our strategy, and we weren't sure whether it was going to work. But that was one strategy that did work. But I can assure you, those redundancies were very, very difficult. It's the hardest thing for managers and leaders to let good people go. These weren't underperforming people. These were high-performing people with good characters that we let go. It was so sad.
Yeah.
Happy to say that of those 26, we've taken a responsibility to assist them into other roles, and 23 have other employment now, which is like three, four months down the track. And we're hoping that we don't think our job's finished until they all get a role, which is what they want and provide some income for them.
Just quickly before we let you go, Brian, with all that in mind, just coming back to the players for a second, I mean, holistically speaking, we've seen in a couple of examples this year of the longer term contracts and that players and clubs sign that clubs perhaps don't want to fulfil in the end, and that the term gets thrown around, salary dump. I mean, do you think, speaking broadly here, that the long term deals for players are going to be less of a thing moving forward in the AFL to protect, to safeguard clubs?
Yeah. Yeah, Sam, I think ideally we should all be aiming for that, and really work genuinely towards that. The issue the clubs come up against is they're really tied on salary cap for a particular year, and they still need to finalise contracts. And we actually spend too much trying to extend contracts. And the way we get over that is back-ending contracts. Other players who are not contracting, we say, look, can you please take less money in the next year and back-end, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's where you get it. That's where I find, my experience says, do as least of that as possible. And it's not necessarily the six-year contracts that are the issue. It's just the day-to-day routine of, paying players what you may not be able to afford at the end of the day, and having to make amends for it in the next year or two, so that becomes the issue. And sometimes it's inevitable, Richmond at the moment will be finding it so difficult to make the whole TPP work. And they would need to be back ending a couple, I'm assuming, to make it work, which we did it when in our day. Now, though, over the last two or three years, we've been able to. We had about a million and a half gap, and that's why we could afford Cameron. And we did that because of two or three years of ensuring we got to this stage. We actually planned for this for the last 3 years. The Cameron deal took 3 years. It didn't take three months or 3 minutes. And I'm very proud of the way our recruiting team did that, Stephen Wells and his team.
So Jeremy Cameron was identified as a person of interest, if I can use that phrase, maybe as long as 3 years ago, Brian?
Yes, yeah. But he's not on his own because we have a really good focus and lens on regional players, particularly from down this way.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I think about 80% of our players come from the regional areas.
Yep. Brian, it's hard. It's impossible not to admire you. The club's relentless pursuit of excellence. Well done on the season. It was a nearly there season, but a good one in so many ways, and such an impressive trade period, and things are looking better than ever down there off the field, as we've talked about as well. Thanks so much for joining us, and enjoy a well-needed break if you can squeeze one in, and best of luck for it.
Thanks, Sam, thanks for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. Cheers.
Good on you. Brian Cook there, the Geelong Chief Executive Officer.